Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide-leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
6:12 now, Tuesday morning, May 27th. Need I tell you what the forecast is, or can you pretty well presume that it's going to be hot and humid, and barring any tropical weather, it'll be that way until October, and then it'll change. David Schultz joins us, professor of political science at Hamline University, talk about a couple of different things. How you doing, David?
I am doing great today, and I hope you're doing well.
I am. Let's talk about the latest on the big, beautiful bill. Where does that stand?
Well, it's cleared the House of Representatives by one vote. I mean, that's how tight it was. I think it was about 215 to 214 or something like that. And now it goes over to the Senate. And just by the way, because it's a tax bill, the Constitution requires that it start in the House of Representatives. So it's gone over to the Senate at this point, and the Senate now has to debate it. And from all the indications, I'm hearing people like Senator Rand Paul from Kentucky and others among Republicans are saying that lots of this is a non-starter. We want to change a variety of things. For example, some are concerned that it still adds too much to the debt, which it does. Others have some other concerns about cuts to Medicaid. But anyhow, it'll go to the Senate. Who knows how long that's going to take and what they're going to do. And just to remind everybody, if the Senate does something different than the House does, which is pretty likely, the Constitution requires that the bill be in exact same form, same language, which means it'll have to go to a conference committee. They have to iron out the details, then voted by the House again, voted by the Senate. So we still have a ways to go on the big, beautiful bill. But it looks like what the House did, it's going to be changed in some ways, but still not clear yet.
I'm just a big, beautiful bill on Capitol Hill, right?
Exactly. I was going to say, I play that video all the time for my class.
Do you really in college? That's interesting.
I do. What I do is I start off by saying this is the very simple way that we learn about how to think about how a bill becomes a law. And I said, that's kind of what the grade school version. And then I say, by the time we throw in interest groups, money in politics, lobbying,
yeah,
and all the other stuff, I said, it looks nothing like just a bill on Capitol Hill.
If only it really worked like they told us in high school in civics, right? If only, but it doesn't. And, you can believe
it
if you want to, but it doesn't work that way at all.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because I stress a lot how to some extent it's like I hate to use the phrase, like a sewer. The sewer in the sense that all kinds of garbage goes in. But what I'm mostly bothered by, I don't know about you, is all the interest groups and lobbyists and everything that really take what could be a good bill and make it all about what? Special interests.
Yeah, along those lines, let's talk about debt and deficit, because I don't know how. First of all, you know, it became popular a while back, I guess, with Obamacare to say read the bill. And then you got these terribly complicated, and we went through it here in Louisiana with tax, changing the tax structure.
Okay.
And then we had an ethics issue that's coming up now, which it seems to me, and I don't mean to drag you into this, but it seems as though if you're going to make the area business friendly, well, in addition to changing the tax climate, you have to change the ethics climate as well and make sure that the businesses know they're not going to get greased for this or that or the other thing. So when it comes to the federal government and debt and deficit neutral, or adding the deficit, debt and deficit, or subtracting from it, or just not changing it at all, these bills are so complicated with such offshoots and such ramifications that go 10 years into the future. I don't know how anybody can confidently score any of this. Thoughts?
You're absolutely correct. These are incredibly complicated because, let's be honest here, very, very few people actually read these entire bills. I think the Big Beautiful Bill is over 1,000 pages. I mean, you have people who will know.
Well, but David, if you did, if I might jump in for a second, even if you did read it, how much of it are you going to understand?
You can't understand something that big, because you're right. We've got so many different moving parts, and if I can like do an analogy, moving parts, gears, sprockets, you know what I'm getting at, like lots of different parts here. And you have areas of law, for example, or areas of policy, whether it's tax policy or whatever, that is just so complicated. So it'll be things like, for example, well, how much do you get to deduct off of this for, like, let's say, for your state taxes? And you get to do it for a certain amount of time, but on certain types of things, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It's, again, it's incredibly complicated to be able to figure out all this different kind of stuff. And that's part of the problem with doing big bills like this, is that people don't read them, people don't understand them, and it's easy to hide stuff, absolutely hide stuff in those bills that nobody knows about, or for you to have a whole bunch of unintended effects that you don't realize that this bill did X, Y, Z or something. My all-time favorite story, this goes back for I don't know how many years ago, is that I think it was Senator Patrick Leahy in Vermont managed to have the Lake Champlain declared as the sixth Great Lake, and it's not a Great Lake, so that Lake Champlain would qualify for all types of money under some kind of Great Lake Restoration Fund. And nobody found that for like years or something like that. So this is the kind of stuff that can happen in big bills like that. It's not transparent. It's not good government.
And everybody's not coming in with the best of intentions either, because just like the story you told, people are trying to put this in for their district or that in for the district, which brings us into the theory, the old thing about one person's pork is another person's bacon, right? I mean, who's
correct
to say what in Louisiana? I don't want them to spend money on Lake Champlain, but or wherever it is, but in wherever that it happens to be, Wisconsin, they don't want, I'm picking a state here, they don't want us to spend money on levees or Lake Pontchartrain. So that's another consideration in all of this, right?
You're absolutely correct here, is that everybody thinks that what they're putting into the bill is good and worthy, and we need it in my district or my people want it, but you're only one of, in the House of Representatives, one of 435 people. But if everybody does that, that's partly why our debt, not for all reasons, but partly why our national debt is so high, is because everybody has an incentive to want to get as much as they want for themselves and think that somebody else will pay for it. Well, what happens? Well, what's the old economist line? There's no such thing as a free lunch.
No.
Everybody wants a free lunch, but guess what? Somebody has to pay. And the way we're doing it now is we keep pushing the problem down the line, except that down the line is here. I read the other day, this is amazing, is that our interest on our debt is now $1 trillion. That's the size of our U.S. military budget. So that interest on the debt, that's not paying off the debt. That's the interest on the debt that we already owe.
And that goes to, we'll take a break. We'll come back. And you know, somebody texted in and said, people don't want to add to the deficit, but people also don't want to cut programs. So explain to me how you make that work. Well, the easy explanation would be you increase taxes, but nobody wants to do that either. And the other side of this is when it comes to the understanding the bill and knowing if you're for it or against it, everybody lines up in either the Democrat or the Republican lines, because I don't know if I'm for it or against it. I don't want to increase the debt or deficit, But then again, maybe I don't want the cuts that would come with it. We'll talk about it when we come back with David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University. If you are for the big, beautiful bill or against it, I would love to hear from you how you made up your mind. And you can text me at 504-260-1870. Does it just go to David? What do we have? A representative democracy is that we have?
What's this? That's a theory.
Is that
that's the theory?
Yeah, that's the experiment, right? Representative democracy.
That's right.
So we can't vote on each individual thing. We elect people to go and vote our interests, which brings back the question, the larger political science interest of, are they voting for our interest or are they voting for theirs, the lobbyists? Are they voting for the district at the expense of the country? 504-260-1870. Are you in favor of the big, beautiful bill or against it? And how did you come to that conclusion? 621 traffic now, WWL. Hi, 625 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking with our friend David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University, about the big, beautiful bill. And I asked you to text in, are you for it or against it, and why? Because I don't know what's good or bad. Somebody said, I'm a Republican, not for the big bill, because I personally don't think there's enough program cuts in it. Somebody else said, if they increase taxes, they'll still spend more and increase the debt. They are all dirtbags. That's kind of nasty, but in a way, I think you're right about the spending more. Vast majority financial experts are warning this is a terrible bill. Personally, I can't imagine how anyone can support cuts to social programs to help the poor while cutting taxes for the wealthy. This bill will make life more difficult for those who are already struggling. And for what? Somebody else said against. Trump, Johnson, and Scalise are for it, so I'm against it. Somebody else said, I'm a boss, long as the rich get another. Well, I don't know. It's all garbled up with what they were trying to say here. But here's the thing. When it comes to Republicans or Democrats, it seems like people should be more aligned with income groups, because sometimes you might find yourself voting for a bill, if you're a Democrat, that hurts you because of your income, or if you're a Republican, that hurts you, not voting for it, but supporting something, wanting your legislators to support something that actually hurts you given your income group.
I think I know what you're saying. I think the answer is yes, is that you would hope, in a good representative democracy, you don't look at it from the perspective of saying, well, the Republicans are for it, I'm against it, or vice versa. But you ask the question, okay, is this helping my constituents? Is this helping the people who I think need to be helped the most, within my district or something like that? Maybe even ask the more important question. I'm going to actually step back even more and say, is this a good bill for the country? Maybe that should be the first question that we ask somewhere else. I'm not sure which is the first or second here, but you know where I'm going here.
Yeah,
partly what I'm concerned about was it last week or the week before when Moody's for the first time in 100 years downgraded the U.S. bond rating and said, you know, we're concerned about all the debt you're accumulating. You know, I would have thought among fiscal conservatives and Democrats alike, they would have said, whoa, this is a warning shot being fired that, you know, that things are not going well in terms of the financial straits of the country. We've got to do something about that. And it seems like that story just kind of like, you know, it appeared for like a second and it disappeared. And so that alone should tell me, or should tell most people out there, that there's a problem with a bill that's going to add how many trillions of dollars to the debt. And that's beyond the question of who's winners and who's losers. I mean, and keep in mind, what we're saying is that we're going to, this bill, if it passes, we're going to borrow more money and we're going to pay more just on interest. And who's that interest going to? That's going to go to banks, in some cases to foreign governments.
So Democrats have lost three members so far this year, 77, I think it was, 70 and 75 years old.
Right.
What happens there? They have no vote. The Democrats lose three votes in the House until they have the special elections to fill them, or do people get appointed?
The Constitution requires that there be a special election. So until an election occurs, they lose those votes. Now, what generally happens is that the staff from the person who passed away or resigned, they oftentimes let the staff stay on to do constituent service stuff. You know, like, you know, they call in and say, Grandma didn't get her Social Security check. Okay, we'll do what we can to help you. But essentially, the people in those districts are more or less without representation.
So if the big, beautiful bill is going to pass,
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Fact that three Democrats, by the force of nature, God, whatever, have died plays in their favor, right?
Exactly. It does at this point. Yes. Yeah. I mean, this might factor into why to timing and why bills might get rushed in certain ways, because people are going to say we've got an advantage because two people are dead or something like that, or this person's incapacitated. Let's move things through or something like that. I mean, we could even have a great discussion at a different time about, remember when, what was her name now? It's Dianne Feinstein.
Yeah, I was going to say that. You've read my mind, David, about wheeling them in where they can barely breathe or anything else to vote. I get it. Thank you, sir.
Yep, exactly.
We'll talk to you again. David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University. We're going to talk to Devontae Lewis when we come back, public service commissioner, about the great power outage on Sunday afternoon. I want to hear your story at 504-260-1870, 630 time now, WWL First News. 643, 17 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL. I don't know about you, but man, I was driving around on Sunday afternoon after the power went out, not to take a joyride, just to see how extensive it was, and I almost started to come in because I thought this was something that was cataclysmic, because in a way it was, I guess, but I went from Bell Chase all the way up to Gretna, and then when I got to, I guess, around Home Depot, I realized the power was on, so I thought maybe it might not be as bad as I thought it was at first, but it was still pretty bad. Devontae Lewis joins us now, Public Services Commissioner. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How are you today?
All right. One thing, you know, before we get into the nuts and bolts of this, I thought about is, and I went to Home Depot and spent money I shouldn't have because I was just looking to walk around the air conditioner, right, was that when I noticed all of the businesses that were closed after the power, and it had come on at that time, but I guess they figured, well, let's just shut it down on a Sunday afternoon, Memorial Day weekend. That had to have cost a lot of people a lot of money, right?
Oh, I can imagine. I mean, I'm thinking about the lost revenue from restaurants, the lost goods from people's homes, the potential surging of their appliances. I mean, so there's some real costs associated with losing power that are sometimes unseen.
And along those lines, the other thought I had, Devontae, was if not, because the farther I drove, the more I was convinced, like, this is going to be something really bad. And it was bad, but not as bad as it could have been. And that brings me to the, you know, the old, I remember as a kid reading Aesop's Fables, and one of them was, don't put all your eggs in one basket, right? But it seems
Correct.
As though when it comes to utilities, we're putting more and more of our eggs in one basket, and eventually something's going to happen. Am I wrong in presuming this or not?
No, I think that's a fair analysis. I would broaden that one egg in all the baskets, but because it's a little broader about what we're talking about letting utilities do, because it's not so much letting competition come, that as we've seen in Texas. That doesn't always bring the best solutions. Not saying that can't be a solution, but it has its own complications. But it's about ensuring that we have utilities be diversified in their operations, which is what we need to be doing to ensure this doesn't happen. And so I think that is a very accurate point.
So what does that mean, diversified in their operations? What would that look
like? So one of the real challenges why we had such a load shed event on Sunday is because for too long we have allowed our utility in the area, Entergy, to be the sole operator of generation and transmission. The reason, I don't think a lot of people know this, that we are even in this organization that people are finding out about called MISO, mm-hmm. was because the Department of Justice said Entergy had uncompetitive practices in building power plants and building transmission lines, therefore needed to be interconnected in a marketplace with other power producers. And so one of the challenges we saw is because we have not made significant advancements in transmission capacity and allowing independent power producers to be in the market, there was nowhere to pull power when the two generators fail. And so we weren't connected to Mississippi. We weren't connected to Arkansas. We weren't connected really to the MISO North, where we saw cheaper power that we could have flowed down into the city of New Orleans and surrounding areas to ensure the lights would be on. Why, so that's what I mean when I say diversify their operations.
Why weren't we connected? I'm trying to get this straight.
Well, we weren't connected because we haven't finished the cost allocations within MISO South. Entergy has fought to say that we shouldn't pay for building transmission. They have made it very difficult for what we would call an independent power producer, our merchant power plant that builds themselves, and then Entergy just buys the power from them instead of building their own gas power plant or nuclear facility or solar facility. And so it's been some of the anti-competitiveness that still exists in MISO. And I think one of the places where MISO's at fault is MISO has never held Entergy accountable when they joined the RTO to say, wait a minute, you should be looking at planning. You should be looking at transmission. And that's really at the fault of regulators. We are the ones who should be pushing that, because MISO can't tell Entergy to build a power plant or build a transmission line, but MISO is supposed to be there to help the planning efforts to do it interregionally and more comprehensive.
All right, let me take a step back, Devante. For those of us that grew up with power and light, okay, and you called and somebody actually answered the phone, and now it's all, you know, computer and everything else. So how did we go from power and light to Entergy to MISO? That's I'm trying to figure out how MISO came into this.
Yeah, so power and light is really just switching to Entergy. It was just the difference of the ownership and the utility. Mm-hmm. MISO, as I said, is a regional transmission organization. It is basically, think about it as an Amazon for electricity and transmission.
Okay.
So it is an organization that has multiple power plants, some owned by the utilities, others own independently, and then the utilities can bid, purchase that power from somebody else, or they also help sharing, spreading the cost of building transmission. So, for instance, North Texas could be connected to South Mississippi to send power both directions if something happens. So MISO, I'd like to say, is more of like an Amazon for electricity and transmission for utilities and those producers to all play in that market.
So is MISO a good idea, operated poorly, or a bad idea that could never work?
An RTO is a real great idea.
What's that? RTO stands for what, Devante?
Regional Transmission Organization.
Okay.
That's what MISO is. Because what it does is it's connecting the electric grids together. One of the challenges in America is that our grid is not connected. So if something happens in Texas, for instance, when we saw Winter Storm Uri, Texas was connected to no other state to be able to flow power. Mm-hmm. So it is a great idea to have. But the problem with the concept is that means you have to have regulators and the RTO be aggressive in ensuring that planning is happening, interconnectivity is happening, and that generation and transmission buildup is not happening solely within the market. And one of the issues that we have within MISO South is that there's only really one kind of utility operating in MISO South, which is Entergy, because Entergy has an OPCO in Louisiana, New Orleans, Texas, Arkansas, and Mississippi. So when they were supposed to be talking about cost allocations and interconnections, it's kind of not intuitive for them to do so, because they're really the only player in MISO South.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up with the nuclear power plants when we come back, all right, because that's another factor in this. We're talking to Devante Lewis, Public Service Commissioner, about the power outage. And, of course, the other question is, that was just the first Sunday of the summer. I don't know what this portends for the rest of the summer, but we'll find out when we come back. 6:50, 10 till 7, traffic now, WWL. right, 6:55, 5 till 7. Got the Sunday before Memorial Day, big holiday weekend. 100,000 people all of a sudden without power for 2 hours or more. Mine was out for about 2 hours. Devante Lewis, our guest, public service commissioner, and I'm looking at a quote from you here. It says, for a scheduled outage to occur and a generator to fail simply should not cause a load-shedding event. That means there's more to the story, either bad forecasting, bad modeling, or higher demand than was projected. This goes, Devante, to Waterford 3, scheduled offline for maintenance in Riverbend in St. Francisville that unexpectedly tripped offline. Explain all of that in context for me, please.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have to take generators, whether they be gas, nuclear, offline for routine maintenance. And to do maintenance in April and May is very common because you want to make sure all your generators can fully function before we get to the real peak heat of the summer months of June, July, and August. So typically what happens is a utility that owns a generator or whoever owns the generator requests to be out of the system by MISO. MISO will then assess the entire ecosystem, say, yes, you can go offline right now. We have enough generation to ensure that we have all of the demand met. That was good. Well, Riverbend tripped, and so they could not access that power as long as a transmission system tripped as well. And that caused not having enough power to meet the demand at the time. And so when I ask those questions, I'm saying, well, part of your forecasting should include scenario building. It should include that if a generator goes offline, do you have enough capacity before you approve one of them going off for routine maintenance? So something went wrong somewhere, or either they did not predict the demand correctly, they did not model the systems correctly, or there was more generation and transmission that failed on Sunday, then it could meet our need. And these are questions that MISO has to deliver us those answers on.
So how concerned are you? Because let's face it, the average person doesn't know about, I don't think, knows about MISO or generators or we talk about nuclear power plants. All we know is that the power either is on or off, and we want it on, okay? So how concerned are you, Devante, as we head into the summer, that this is going to be the new normal, or was that a one-off event that happened on Sunday? Because I think that's what everybody wants to know.
Well, yes. Well, we have not had a load shed event in upwards to 20 years. So this is a very unlikely event. However, this is the third load shed that Louisiana has seen in the last 2 months. We had a load shed in early April and in late April in the northwest region of the state around Shreveport and Bossier from SWEPCO, the utility there, and the other regional transmission organization that Louisiana is a part of, which is the Southwest Power Pool. So while I would say it's unlikely to have three in one year, really in 2 months, is something completely unheard of. And so that gives me some real pause that there's something more underlining. We know for a fact one of the load sheds in SWEPCO's territory was due to SPP having a 6-degree difference in their forecasting of weather predictions. MISO has admitted that there was around a 3-4-degree difference in their weather forecasting.
Wait, now, by that, do you mean the high temperature and how many people were going to be using air conditioners and power?
Correct. So they utilized temperature as a way to put in the model to predict demand to then predict what the load would be. And so those two factors are sending some strong signs. And this could be related to some of the federal cuts because they use GSF modeling from NOAA, which has seen dramatic cuts from DOGE recently. So that's another question. Could this be more frequent here in Louisiana, but also more frequent across the nation?
Did you say schematic cuts?
No, DOGE cuts.
Oh,
from
dramatic,
Elon Musk.
Dramatic cuts. I got you. Okay. I was
dramatic
just kidding.
Cuts.
I was
yes.
just kidding. I was just playing with you. All right, Devante, thank you. I don't know, man. I hope this is not the future that we're looking at because it's very complicated stuff. I'm glad you got your eye on it, and we'll talk to you again soon. Devante Lewis, Public Service Commissioner, talking about what happened on Sunday. And again, like I said, somebody texted and said, Tommy, it's not like you were worried. Yes, I was worried. The more I drove and the more power I saw out, I'm thinking, this is it. This is the attack, the big weekend attack. Everything's going to be paralyzed. We'll be back, WWL.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Anyone who loves playing baseball or softball knows that one of the first steps in that journey is breaking in your first glove. It's where your love of the game began. Where does your child's baseball or softball journey begin? Go to playball.org to get started. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great, but it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going, whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
I'm Emma Grade, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Grade, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Grade, an Audacy podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.